Hey, everybody, it's Becky Davidson, and I want to welcome you to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. We are so glad that you are joining us today. And, you know, we know that this season is so challenging for our special needs community because our kids are out of routine. They're not able to go and do the activities and go to the places that they're used to going. And we know that for our kiddos, it's been especially hard. But we know for you as parents and caregivers, we're in a challenging season as well because so many of our supports, so many of the things that we had in place, we are not able to use right now. And we know that you have got more stress on you and more responsibility. So we just want you to know that we see you and we are here for you. And I want to encourage you, if you have not been to our website, please go check out risingaboveministries.org. We have so many resources available there for you to take advantage of, just to bring you some hope and encouragement and inspiration during this time. We actually have a new study that just went out for dads, and it's for free for right now. It's a study called Extraordinary Legacy, and it's taken from some of the blog posts that my late husband Jeff wrote. And anybody who knew Jeff knew that he was super passionate about helping men become the husbands and fathers that God called them to be. So if you've not already gone and checked that out, go to our website, risingaboveministries.org. And you can find that resource for free right now on our website. Also, something that we are super excited about is that our By the Brook retreat that we host here in Cookeville every summer, for this year, because of what's going on with COVID-19, we are bringing By the Brook to you. You will be able to participate in By the Brook for free. This year, and we are so excited about that. So again, if you'll go to our website, you can find information how you can register. You have to register in order to participate, but once you do that, you'll start getting emails with all kinds of information about how you can access the retreat. And that retreat will be coming up on June 26th and June 27th. And you can find all the information that you need on our website. Our guest today on the podcast is actually going to be one of the speakers sharing with us at this year's By the Brook Retreat. She will be talking about her most recent book, Sharing Love Abundantly in Special Needs Families, The 5 Love Languages for Parents Raising Children with Disabilities, which she co-authored with Dr. Gary Chapman. And Jolene Philo is both a parent and a daughter of loved ones with special needs and disabilities, as well as a former educator who has worked with children for 25 years. In addition to her book, The 5 Love Languages for Parents of Children with Disabilities, she has also written several books on caregiving and special needs parenting, including a book on childhood PTSD. You are going to love hearing her words of wisdom and the things that she has to share with us. And so I know that you're going to enjoy this conversation that I have with my friend, Jolene Philo. Jolene, thank you so much for joining me today on the Rising Above podcast. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today.
And I am so glad to be with you. You know, we're recording this during the COVID-19 shutdown. So getting to visit and talk, it's kind of cool.
I am telling you. And then getting to actually see you face to face, you know, not actually face to face. We're doing like really social distancing because I'm in my office in Tennessee and you are in Iowa, right?
Yes, Central Iowa.
But mm-hmm. I can see you. And so that's fun. Getting to have you feel like we're connecting better because it feels like I can see you and we can have this conversation. Especially now since we've had this time of not seeing people, I think we're all just craving community. So
I think that's true. And I think that's really true all the time, not just during COVID-19, all the time for our disability and special needs community.
Totally agree.
Crave that and have a difficult time mm-hmm. finding it.
And so it's kind of giving people outside of our community a taste of what many of our families deal with every day.
It really is. You know, there's now and then there's like this piece of me that kind of wants to go up to people and kind of slap them around a little bit, because especially at our church, Which, and we're doing live stream services and everybody's into them, but people are like, oh, you know, this is just so different and I miss my family. Well, I grew up in a caregiving family. Mm. And for probably the last 20 or 25 years of my dad's life, he couldn't go to church because yeah. he was bedridden. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't live streaming. There were like Dr. Richard Schuller with the Crystal Cathedral, and he would watch that on Sunday morning or whatever he could get. Or there might be a radio service, mm-hmm. but he didn't see people unless they came to see him for wow. 20 to 25 years. And I just want to let people know, let this time create empathy in you. May yes. you see what our disability community lives with all the time.
Yes.
And you reach out to them as individuals and as a corporate church.
Could not agree more. And for so many families, just, you know, you and I both have had conversations with families during this time, special needs families around the world, and just seeing the need even greater now for that empathy and understanding of what they're going through. You know, for so many families who have children, especially who are used to their routines and who are used to going certain places at a certain time, those families, now that they're not able to do that, are really struggling. And so I think it is a great time for that empathy to be built for our community.
I think it is. And I also think for those families, those caregiving families that are handling this pretty well, and there are those that are, because I mean, this isn't anything new to them. They're mm-hmm. used to it.
Yeah.
They need to realize just how much they have to offer other people who are struggling.
Yes.
You know, you may be able to say something to them or share a little tip mm-hmm. or something that's going to make a huge difference for them. Don't discount your experience and what you've learned. Share it.
Totally. That's a great word. So share with us a little bit about your special needs journey, your life in the special needs world. I know you alluded a little bit to your dad, and you've always been in a caregiving family. So share a little bit about your background and your family story in the special needs world.
Yes, my dad was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 1959 when I was about 2 years old. So please don't do the math and figure out how old I am now. So I grew up in the 60s. My dad's MS progressed pretty quickly. He was out of work within a few years and had to stay home. He stayed in our home. I have an older sister and a younger brother, and a very determined mother. Mm. And dad stayed in our home until 1983. By then, my sister and I were married. My brother was finishing college. And then dad developed diabetes and went to a nursing home. So my mom was his caregiver for 38 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we were active caregivers in our home growing up mm-hmm. As kids. You know, we did stuff most kids don't do. Like, we know how to light dad's pipe for him. We were expert at hiding a urinal when you were out in public and taking and emptying it and bringing it back to him. Mm. All sorts of things that now looking back, it's like, huh, I bet most 7-year-olds couldn't do that.
Didn't do that, yeah.
So yeah. The other piece of my caregiving journey is our first child was born in 1982. My husband and I lived in South Dakota in a very remote part of the state then. Mm-hmm. And our son was found to have what was called a tracheoesophageal fistula. So his trachea wasn't connected. And it came down and formed a blind pouch. His esophagus did. His trachea went into his, excuse me, I'm getting this all mixed up. His esophagus wasn't connected. So it came down and formed a blind pouch, and it went up from his stomach and hooked into his trachea. So he had to be life flighted to Omaha and had surgery at birth. And I won't go into everything, but by the time he was 5, he had had 7 surgeries. We moved to Iowa kind of in the midst of that. And then another surgery at 15. He had no other issues physically. And he was very capable intellectually. So, you know, by the time we moved to Iowa, most people didn't realize what he had gone through. And he did very well, except that in high school, we started seeing some behavior issues, which it took till he was a young adult to get diagnosed as post-traumatic stress disorder caused by all that early trauma. Wow. And he went through treatment and he's done very well. He's now on his own and, you know, has a family and is a farmer and does well. We have a daughter, Anne, who is 30, and she and her family live with us. So right now we're also kind of helping raise our grandkids who are 5 and 2. So we're back into caregiving, and my very determined mother is now 91 and lives in a memory care unit. And, you know, I do a lot of her caregiving, which of course has to all be done remotely at this point. Wow. Or window visits.
Yeah. I love seeing that, the window visits. That's pretty amazing. So, you mean you've pretty much been a caregiver your entire life, from the time of a little girl all the way through now. That's been part of your story and your journey. You probably wouldn't know anything different. You know,
I really wouldn't. And, you know, it took me, I didn't even realize that until I was at a writing conference one time, and I had a meeting with an editor, a magazine editor, and I couldn't figure out why I was in there with him, because I had a book proposal about growing up with my dad. And he said, well, we're looking for articles about parents who care for kids with special needs. Do you have any experience with that? Mm-hmm. And I kind of looked at him, because we never really had considered our son to be special needs, because he never needed an IEP. He didn't have any of those things by the time he got older. And I thought, and I said, well, my son had a lot of medical issues and my dad had MS. And that editor said, I will write a contract for you right now about how being raised by caregiving parents and with a disabled father prepared you to parent your son. And that was the first time I really made that connection that my life was in any way unusual.
Right. Well, then
from there on out, that kind of writing just took off, and that's what people bought.
That's what I was going to say. You know, you're out of your life, out of your story. Now you have written, oh my goodness, I wrote down the list of books that you have written, and it's a lot. It is a lot, which is exciting. So you've got, you know, The Different Dream for My Child book, Caregiver Notebook, which I actually, you sent us a copy when that came out, and I filled all that out with all of John Alex's information. It's a great resource. Tell a little bit about that one, because that, I think for caregivers, that you, did you develop that for your mom? Was that kind of based on your experience?
No, it wasn't. Actually, the publisher of my first two books, A Different Dream for My Child and Different Dream Parenting, asked me if I would consider working on that project. So that's how that one came about. And because someone in their publishing house was dealing with a very sick spouse or whatever, and they thought, boy, I wish we had a notebook. So that notebook came out of that experience. Unfortunately, it's no longer in print.
Is it not?
No. It sold very well, but it was more expensive to produce. And so when it came time for a second printing, they decided not to do that. Now, I keep thinking I'm going to develop an app based on it, but I never have time, and I don't know how to do that or where to find the person to do it with me. But
you never know, somebody may be listening, and that's their thing.
Yeah. If you are listening and you would be interested in helping me with that, you can email me. Go to my website, differentdream.com. And there's a contact me button, and just email me with that, and I would love to talk to you.
I know for me as a parent, to have all of that information in one location, you know, I created back years ago when Jeff was so sick and I was having people in and out, because I never knew if we were going to end up in the hospital with him from day to day. And I created my own book, per se, for John Alex, so that if someone came in, I could say, here you go, had all his allergies, had all his medication, had all his doctors, and it's still, I still have it. I update it, you know, every so often, but to have it in an app that you could easily share with caregivers, wouldn't that be something?
That would just be wonderful, because there are things you can do then, like one part of the caregiver's notebook has a place where you write down all the medications, you know, and all the numbers. You basically take what's on the label. But if it was an app, you could take a picture of the label and it would be right there. And you could take a picture of every pill, so that when you're at the doctor and you maybe don't remember, it's like, oh, the pill looks like this. So there's so many ways it could be useful. Not having been raised in the computer age, I don't have all those skills. And I just don't have the ability to learn them. So,
well, there's somebody out there who does. So that would be
there is. I know in God's right time, if he wants that to come about, he'll bring that person and we'll get to work on it. Cause that's how all my books come about.
Well, and you've got more. That's just a start. So the other one you did was Every Child Welcome. And that one, I want you to share a little bit about it, but that was one that I have it on my bookcase, several copies over here on my bookcase, because that's one of those ones that when a church comes to us and they're, you know, we have a training manual, but that's a great addition to help churches know how to love and serve our community. So share a little bit about that book. Sure.
That book came about, it's called Every Child Welcome, and it's a handbook for churches who want to include children with disabilities. I co-wrote that with my good friend, Katie Weatherby. She and I have a lot in common in that we're both parents of kids who had medical issues when they were young and kind of have overcome them, and they're now out young adults in the workplace. And we also both have education backgrounds. So she was a special ed teacher. I was an elementary teacher with a special ed minor. And so I had a lot of kids mainstreamed into my classroom who had special needs and disabilities. And she worked exclusively with them. So we had been talking about, you know, the things that we did and how natural it was for us. And we were like, let's write a book together and put some of this stuff that we know how to do for accommodating for kids with special needs, so that in any church, whether they have a formal special needs program or not, they can meet the needs of the kids coming in their doors. So if there's a little first grader who comes in who has autism, or a sixth grader with Down syndrome, the book is filled with ideas of what you can do in Sunday school, midweek programming, whatever, to welcome that child and help them participate and bring the information to a level where they can understand it and all of the other children can understand it. Mm-hmm. And then it talks about things like, you know, creating a buddy system if you want, or how to set up a more robust formal program if you want that too. But our idea was, let's make something that churches can use wherever they are. And even like I can see Sunday school teachers just having that book on their shelf with their Sunday school manual. So they've got their lesson for the week. Well, how could I make sure everybody gets to read scripture? Or how can I arrange my classroom so it feels comforting and safe to all my students?
And it's such a great resource. Like I said, we have several copies here at the office that we share, you know, with other churches and other people who are looking at starting a disability ministry, because it's just a great, like you said, manual, walk people through how to do that.
Yeah. And that one has sold really well without us doing a lot of promoting on it. You know, it kind of found its niche and people just know you want to get this book. You want to have it on hand. And that's that makes me feel so good, because as an author, I'm not in this for the money. Thankfully, I have a husband who sees this as
right.
Doesn't expect me to be making big bucks, which you don't when you write for the special needs community. But the fact that it's getting out there and it's being used, and that children all over the country and sometimes all over the world are maybe hearing about Jesus because of this book, that is just like, I just can't believe that I get to do that.
It's a great joy. And you know, just, you have, it's unbelievable. Like I said, I look at your list of books and it just keeps going. And so I want to spend some time talking about the last two books that you had come out. And the one prior to your most recent one was, Does My Child Have PTSD? Mm-hmm. I believe I have them in the right order.
Yeah, we do.
So share a little bit about that. And I want to look at how the PTSD may be playing out in homes right now, especially with people being home or with the isolation, with being out of routine. Mm-hmm. And maybe there are parents out there whose children have PTSD and they don't even realize it. And so what would be some of the things that a family might be looking for? Just share a little bit about that book and how that can relate to where we are in this season.
Sure. And that book, I want readers to know, is written for the general market, because I go out and do a lot of training with teachers, public school teachers with it, and in other foster and adoptive care. And so I wanted that book to be accessible to the general public. Yeah. So if you're looking for a book with a lot of scriptural basis about PTSD, this one doesn't have it because that was never its purpose. So what I would say to parents is that if you know that your child has lived through a lot of trauma, and that can be anything from a difficult birth trauma, even if the mother dealt with a lot of trauma when she was pregnant, that can, those stress hormones can transfer to the child, and the child can be born with PTSD markers, which make them way more at risk for developing PTSD. But if your child has a trauma history like that, medical, if they've been in foster care, if the child has been adopted, whether that was at birth and it was a wonderful adoption, or, you know, adoption through foster care of a child who's gone from home to home to home, yeah, any of those things. And by the way, I am a proponent of adoption. It just has some issues with it.
Right.
You need to be aware of your children. It could be things like a car accident or natural disasters or any kind of abuse, sexual, physical, emotional abuse that they've gone through, bullying, lots of moving, divorce, the death of a close family member. Any of those things can cause trauma in children, and we all deal with trauma. The thing is, the more traumas a child deals with and the younger they are when those things start, the more likely they are to develop PTSD.
Okay.
So if you look back at your child's life and see, oh, yeah, my child's been through this and this and this, and we're seeing some unusual behaviors, well, then maybe we are dealing with PTSD and maybe I need to find some help. Now, just a few quick things on that. Trauma happens to all of us. PTSD happens when that trauma that we've gone through that kind of overwhelms our system for a while gets trapped in the brain, and all the energy that goes with the cortisol and the adrenaline kind of gets trapped there and can't get out. If the child or an adult isn't able to process that trauma or have somebody come alongside and help them process it and get through it and realize it had a beginning and a middle and an end, it sticks in the brain, and they will start being triggered by events that remind them of the original trauma. And so those triggers, you know, we all have them at first. Like if you've been in a car accident,
yes,
you may wake up the first two nights with a nightmare about being in a car accident.
Yes.
Or hearing a siren might make you flash back and think about it. But eventually, over time, you can think through that and think, oh yeah, that's over, I'm done with that. Or you may go see a therapist and talk to a therapist for a little bit, and it fades away. But if it doesn't, and those symptoms are still showing up more than 3 months after the original trauma, then you may be looking at PTSD.
Okay. And how does that manifest? How does that manifest?
It manifests differently depending on the age. You might see, whatever the age of the child, a lot of sleep problems like nightmares or falling asleep and then waking up screaming or having a hard time getting to sleep. Because as long as you're awake and distracted, you don't have to think about the trauma, but it creeps in then, and so it enters your subconscious, triggers again, and those flashbacks. Also, children may act a lot younger than normal. That's called regressive behavior. So they may have been done with baby talk, and they start baby talk, or they may have been done sucking their thumb, and they start it again. Younger children you may see them playing out, repeating the trauma, acting out the trauma in play. As kids get a little older and have more speech, what may happen for them is they may just talk about it incessantly. You know, you've heard this story 20 times, and they just have to keep telling it and telling it. Or conversely, they may not want to talk about it at all. They may even say it didn't happen. They may be avoiding the place of the original trauma. They hate to go to the doctor's office, or they won't go to the ball field because they were bullied there or whatever. So those are just a few, and there's lots more. And my book, Does My Child Have PTSD, goes through those in greater detail and by age. So what you would see in a young child as opposed to an elementary age as opposed to a teen.
And then does it break down then, like what a parent does from there? If you think, okay, my child does have PTSD, then do you walk through some suggestions of, I mean, obviously therapy and some things like that, but do you walk through some ways that a parent can help their child walk through that?
And really, if your child has, if you're pretty sure your child has PTSD and you can go to a therapist and they say yes, they qualify, you know, they meet all the diagnostic markers, then you really should try and find a therapist to work with your child. But we as parents can do a lot and we can avoid having that trauma turn into PTSD in some cases. For younger children, the main thing is for the primary caregiver, whoever that may be, whether it's the parent who's there or a foster parent or a daycare provider or a teacher, you know, in a school shooting scenario, if that primary caregiver in that situation can stay calm and compassionate, the kids may not develop PTSD because they take their cues from us.
Absolutely.
The source of their security and the people are supposed to be protecting them are going bonkers and, you know, crying and screaming and flailing, then we have just amplified the situation. Yeah. So if we can stay calm, at least for the time being, when the kids are there, and provide that calm presence they need and assure them that they're safe and provide whatever they need to cope during that time, they may not develop PTSD. And then we need to go back with them and give them opportunities to talk about it, to process it. Mm-hmm. And they may need to talk about it over and over for a while until they realize that they're safe, and you can ask them how they're feeling. And there's a really good book by Dr. Peter Levine and Maggie Klein, that's called Trauma Proofing Your Kids. Mm. And they have what they call first aid for trauma. And they walk you through step by step through this process of what you can do to help kids process trauma at different ages. And I would really recommend that book. I refer to it in my book, Does My Child Have PTSD? And give some examples of how to use it. So there's much we can do to prevent trauma and to help kids process it. But if they're still showing those symptoms and it's more than 3 months after the original event, you need to be looking at finding some therapy.
Now, what do you do? Because I'm just thinking about my situation. You know, I have a child who is very involved with special, you know, has lots of special needs, nonverbal, and he lost his dad. Mm-hmm. And so I really don't see any. He's still, you know, he's happy. I tried my best to stay calm for him and whatnot. But what do you do for those kids who, you know, a lot of them who have profound special needs have had lots of medical trauma in their childhood, in their youth, when they were born? What do you do for those children who are nonverbal or who have such high medical needs to keep that, to help them process through? What would you recommend for that?
Well, first of all, I would recommend anytime they're going to the doctor or having a procedure in the hospital or whatever, we as parents have to be really proactive. Mm-hmm. And we need to insist that we will be with the kids whenever they are conscious.
Yes.
And we should be holding their hand so they're grounded, so they know they've got safety. And we need to insist, even if that means saying, nope, we're not going to do this procedure unless you fill in the blank, unless you provide some lidocaine, you know, to put on this wound before you start stitching, unless you have a video game they can concentrate on or whatever,
some sort of distraction
so that they're not paying attention to this, or unless you let me be with my child until they go under and then you have me back there in recovery before they come out of it. Mm-hmm. So the child always feels like they have someone with them. So those are things we just have to do. And if we do those things, we can prevent a lot of trauma. And we also can ask the child life specialist, which most big hospitals have and most children's hospitals have now, to come and help because that's their job. Well, now, for kids who have gone through trauma and are nonverbal, I think we have to be really good observers of our kids. And like you said, John Alex isn't showing really any signs, mm-hmm. well, then you know, fine. Right. If he's not showing symptoms, he's probably doing okay. But if a child is, if you can tell they're agitated or something is bothering them, I think we just have to do what we can and communicate as we can and let them communicate. You know, can they squeeze your hand to a yes and no question? You know, are you thinking about fill in the blank? Mm-hmm. Does that make you feel scared? Does that make you feel whatever? Mm-hmm. Does it help if I do this? And we can figure out, and if they can't communicate, we just have to try different things and see what calms our kids and just be there. You know, you think about what did you do with your children, your babies? Because all babies are nonverbal.
Right.
And they go through trauma. What do we do for them?
You're calm and peaceful and love and hold and hug and
hug and cuddle them and coo and sing and have them with you and... Well, those maybe are what we have to do, even if it's a nonverbal 45-year-old.
Yes.
If that's what they need, that's what they need.
Well, and I think it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier. If me as the mom, mm-hmm. if I'm calm and I'm peaceful and I'm reassuring to him, he's going to feel that. But if I'm all agitated and upset and scared and I'm acting out of my fear, he is going to feel that too. So, and I think that goes just across the board on so many things, just that we set the tone. Set the tone.
And it's true now, you know, when we're all kind of socially isolated and kids can't get to their therapies or they have to do it visually and that's not, you know, that's tough. And how we respond to this social isolation again makes a huge difference for our kids. So if we're complaining about it all the time and we're talking about everything that's wrong, our kids are going to pick up on that. Now we can be honest and say, you know, this isn't fun. I know you miss your friends. I miss my friends. Mm-hmm. But this is what we have. So we're going to try and figure out something we can do. So what can we do? Maybe that means that when normally they don't get popsicles, they're going to get a popsicle, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, or you're going to watch silly movies and make popcorn or whatever. You got to figure out how to make it work. And then you have to take care of yourself as a caregiver. You have to acknowledge that, you know, I had to ignore my feelings and stay calm for the sake of my child here. Now I've got to create some space for me to process my emotions or to talk to somebody, and it's so that I don't get stuck in there. Maybe you have a friend that you can text every day.
Yes.
And talk to about your emotions. Mm-hmm. Because then if it's texting, your kids aren't going to overhear you complaining.
Yes.
So maybe texting is a good way to go. Or maybe there's an hour where your spouse or an in-home caregiver does come in. Mm-hmm. Or maybe one of your child's typical siblings could watch the child for a little bit. And then you could get away and do something. Okay. I had one mom tell me that their daughter, who is pretty significant high needs, loves baths. Mm-hmm. So they just put her in the bathtub and, you know, can have they can be out and eat a meal together as a couple while their daughter's in the bathtub. And so that's how they cope with it. You have to be real creative, but you have to care for yourself.
You have to. That's exactly right. And I think then once we are doing that, I think it's a daily mindset. It's waking up every day and going, you know what? This maybe isn't what we like. We don't, you know, things are harder. But if I'm going around with this negativity and just feeding my mind with that, of course it's going to overflow into my son and then he's going to feed off of that. So,
and you know, we tend to think, well, I don't have anybody to talk to. There's nothing I can do. Well, I know our church has, and on everything they're sending out right now says, if you need somebody to talk to, call us. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't go to a church, I think at this point you could call any church that you feel comfortable calling, mm-hmm. and there will be someone who at least would do a Zoom meeting with you or talk to you on the phone.
Absolutely.
When you can do that. And then there's also, just like there's been a rise in telemedicine, there's been a rise in tele mental health care therapy. Yes. And there are a lot of therapists. My sister is a therapist, and she spends part of the year in Minnesota and part of the year in Arizona. And she meets with her clients when she's in Arizona, and they just do it with Zoom meetings. So you can arrange something that way without having to get out of the house.
Yes. Yeah. And there's so many more opportunities for that now. I mean, like we've been hosting virtual small groups for moms, and you know, had moms from all around the country join in for that. And it just feeds that need of community, even though we can't actually be face to face. So I think there are lots of opportunities now for
there are, and there are Facebook groups, you know, of people whose child may have the same condition as yours. Yes. And then groups with a wider range of disabilities. My only thing in any of that is pay attention. And if you end up in any kind of a group where there's a lot of negativity, I like to call them toxic situations, get out of there.
Get out. Absolutely.
Positive. Absolutely. You don't want to be around toxic people.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Well, let's move into your most recent book.
Yeah.
Come out. And Sharing Love Abundantly in special Needs Families. And for anybody, I think most everybody has heard of the Five Love Languages, those books. They've been around. There's lots of different ones. And so share about how you got to be a part of this book, with basically the Five Love Languages for special needs families, how that came about, and share with us a little bit about the book.
You know, that was one that wasn't even on my radar screen. I just never even would have thought that I would be doing that book, but it was shortly after we moved to this house about 3 years ago, and I was sitting right in this chair one morning, and I was just at that point where it was like, you know, we've got things, we're settled in enough and things are moving forward. I think I can start writing again. I'm going to be able to get back to my normal schedule. So I opened my email, and I had an email from a gal who often guest blogs for differentdream.com. And she said, "Jolene, when are you going to write the special needs version of the Five Love Languages book?" And it was just like there's this light bulb up over my head. And I that is a great idea. So I told my family about it at supper. They're like, "That's a great idea." I emailed my agent the next day. She's like, "That's a great idea." So one of the authors in their agency is Jocelyn Green, who wrote the military version of the Love Languages book with Dr. Okay. Sherman. So the agency knew who his people were. So as I like to say, my people contacted his people.
His people, there you
and
go.
The rest is history. Well, it was a long history, but we got an email back from Dr. Chapman's editor, who said, you know, at every conference when he speaks, marriage conference, somebody comes up and says, "But we have kids with special needs. How do we do this?"
Yes.
And he has wanted to write that book for a long time. He's just been waiting for someone to come along, the right person.
And there you are.
So that's how it happened, you know, and we did a lot of back and forth on what the book should be like, but finally we signed the contract, and he was a joy to work with. We've never met in person, though we did have a virtual meeting like this, kind of a Zoom meeting,
right,
to talk it over, and lots of emails. So that's how it happened. And I still can't believe it. And what I love about that book is it, and this is why it sells so well, is two things. The love languages are simple to use.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, they're effective. They really can make a difference, and they do make a difference if they're implemented. So, you know, and what do special needs families need to survive? Simple and effective tools.
Yes, so, ma'am.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I interviewed like 40 families of kids with special needs, families that were using the love languages because they weren't around when our kids were little, so I wasn't sure how to do it. So these families have come up with the most wonderful things that they're doing to figure out their kids' love language, to adapt the love languages. And so I took all their wisdom and put it together in this book. And also it has sections on, you know, for married couples, how do you do the love languages with each other when you're caregiving constantly? What do we do for the typical sibs? How can we get friends and extended family and church families in to use the love languages with us?
Yeah.
So we get filled up. And then how can we use the love language, communicate what we know about our kids' love languages to the professionals who work with them. So at school and at the doctor and at the therapist, our kids feel loved and then perform better.
Run through what, just in case there are people who are not familiar sure. with those five love languages are, run through real quick what those five love languages are.
I have them right here.
Are you ready to go? Yeah.
There's always one that I can't remember. So they're words of affirmation, and that is if you feel most filled up and feel like you're loved when people compliment you or encourage you or just tell you you've done a good job, that's a words of affirmation person. And that can include like texts and notes and phone calls, anything with words. Quality time is spending uninterrupted time with someone where you are the main focus. If that fills you up, you're a quality time person. Receiving and giving gifts. So you really love it if somebody gives you a gift, and it doesn't have to be an expensive gift. That's Becky, huh?
That and acts of service are those would be my top two. Yeah.
So it doesn't even have to be a bought and gift. It can be like a feather that you found on the way home if you know somebody is into that.
Right.
Or it can be just like one of my friends says, my husband knows I love Reese's peanut butter cups. So when he shops, he just brings some home for me now and then.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be big or fancy or
just that you've thought of that person yeah. and yeah. what brings them joy. Yeah.
And in the same way, then that is the way in each of these that you express love to others most easily.
Yes.
Whatever way you receive it. So you're going to be a gift giver. If you're quality time, you will want to spend time with someone who you think could use a boost. Or you will send them a card with words of affirmation on it, if that's yours. The other two are acts of service, and that's me. So it's when somebody does something for me, not what they think I want or what they want me to want, but what I really want. And it can be as simple as washing the dishes or, you know, shaking out a rug. If people do those things for me, I really feel loved. And then I'm always doing things for them. And then the last one is physical touch. And this is not a sexual touch at all. It's that physical touch, like a squeeze on the shoulder, or if it's a kid, a pat on the head or ruffling their hair. Or my husband is a physical touch person. And so are the other two adults in our house. So I'm the lonely little petunia in the onion patch with them. My husband wants a kiss before he leaves for work, and he wants me to turn and acknowledge him when he gets home from work and give him a hug or a kiss. He likes to hold hands when we pray at night as a family. So those are the five. And then the main thing is we all have a primary love language. And in this book and in any of Dr. Chapman's books, there are quizzes so you can figure out your love language.
There's online ones too.
Yeah. So, and we usually have a secondary love language. So we'll have one that we score highest in, and maybe one that's close behind, and then others that kind of fall down at the bottom. So I had to learn physical touch as a love language with my husband. He had to learn acts of service for me, so that we both feel loved. And the same is true for our children and the other people around us. We need to learn their love languages, and we need to speak their language to make sure they feel loved. And then they will start speaking our love language, and we'll feel loved.
And it's hard. It's a challenge, I think, for, like, you know, like you were saying, the physical touch. I would be the same way. That would be the lowest probably on mine. And so then how do you, it's dying to yourself then to knowing that someone else's love language is something that maybe is out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But when you're willing to do that, that's love. You know, when you're willing to die to yourself to give that person what they need.
And you may never speak it fluently. Mm-hmm. And you may have to think about it, just like learning a second language. You probably never become as fluent in it. You may have to think a little bit before you speak. We have to do that with the love languages too. You have to think about it. You have to be really intentional and remind yourself, okay, I need to do this today so that so-and-so feels loved. And that's important because I love them and I want them to feel loved, just like you said, dying to yourself. But we can do it. And the person we're speaking it to is not going to fault us because we don't do it fluently.
Right.
They're going to appreciate us because we tried.
We're trying. So how, you know, you live in a house you shared with, that's multi-generational. You've got your, it's you and your husband, and then your daughter, right? And her husband, and then grandchildren. And
yes,
you all are in the same home together. So how does that play out in your home with when everybody's got different love languages and trying to make it work all living under the same roof together?
Yeah, we have to work at it. One thing is that we do have separate living spaces, and we're just about to begin on a big remodeling addition so that we will have really two completely separate living spaces. Right now we all share a kitchen, but anyway, it will be better after this summer. And if I make it through the remodel,
yeah,
quarantine, if we all do,
yes,
you know, I think there's a book in that too.
I was going to say, you're going to have another book, and you're going to really get to put the five love languages into use,
yes,
right here in this season. Yeah.
It can be the love languages in times of chaos.
There you go. There you go.
But we just have to be cognizant. And as I alluded to before, I am the only acts of service person, and the other three adults are physical touch.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them. Wow. Yeah. So, and you know, it's a little bit.
That would be hard, Jolene.
Yes. You know, and then we aren't sure the grandkids are 5 and 2, but mm-hmm, I think the grandson who's 5, he's maybe physical touch and words of affirmation just because he talks constantly. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And the 2-year-old is just like, basically, her love language is, I'm going to run the world someday.
There you go.
Yeah. So we have
good to know that now, you know.
Yeah. But, and Dr. Chapman says, if your child is 5 and under, use all the love languages with them. You know, just use them all and worry about figuring out what their primary one is later.
Yes.
Because we all, for proper child development, you need all 5. You really do. But for us as adults, I just have to remember to show, like, give my husband that kiss and make sure that we all hold hands at supper, even if he's not there, because it's important to the other two. I can give my daughter a hug and that kind of thing. It's a little more awkward with my son-in-law.
Son-in-law, yes. Yeah.
You know? So, exactly. But, you know, I think he's also really, I think words of affirmation are important to him. And that's my second love language.
Yes.
So
yes,
I can use that with him. And I think that works quite well. The main thing I think is that they had to learn that they needed to start stepping up acts of service for me. In fact, mm-hmm, my daughter talked to everybody, including my husband, and said, you know, she doesn't get her love language spoken much at all.
That's
so
good.
You could just like make her a latte, or even just ask her if she wants a latte,
mm-hmm,
every day. That would go a long way. And it really has.
Wow.
I just
good.
Have to remember to not always be trying to do stuff for everybody, because that's my natural.
It's easy for us to do when that's your love, because I'm the same way. You know, it's like, yes, that's my love language. So you think everybody else is the same.
Right. And so I have to think, okay, give her a pat, or, you know, just use all the love languages,
yes,
because they each have a secondary one,
mm-hmm,
and try to make sure I hit all of those things sometimes.
Yeah, being intentional about what you're doing. And then if the thing is, we think, oh, that's going to be so hard and take so much time and effort. But the reality is, if we'll do that, then our whole household's going to run more smoothly, because
mm-hmm,
people are getting their needs met, and you're actually going to, once you get into that groove, it's just going to become natural in what you do. And then your whole house is going to be more joyful and happy because people are getting their needs met.
That's right. That's right. And I think part of it too is not even the love languages. The love languages are a really good way of helping us become more intentional about loving. And so once we've learned to be more intentional with the people around us, we can be intentional in other ways too,
yes,
that aren't necessarily the love languages, you know, like, have I made sure that I communicated that well? I better ask, you know, have I done, am I taking somebody for granted?
Yes.
And, you know, am I taking our living situation for granted?
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do to be more grateful, to be more intentional? And all of that changes the climate of a home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Jolene, we end every podcast with the one thing. So tell us the one thing that you would tell a parent raising a child with special needs to help them during this season of isolation, of quarantine, of being out of routine, you know, based on your years of knowledge through the world of PTSD, through the five love languages. What would you tell a parent? What's the one thing you would say to them to help them as they're navigating this time that we've never encountered before in our lifetime?
I would just say, instead of getting caught up in the circumstances that we're in and how everything is so changed and it's really not good and we're living with a lot of stress and that's not good for my child, and you know, and you start getting in that hamster wheel of negativity and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Take a minute and realize that, you know, today is the day when my child is six. And, you know, we're in this strange circumstance. Or this is the day when my child is 15. This is Bill at 20. This is Sally at 18. This is Trevor at age three. Whatever your child's age is, whatever their situation is, just take a minute and savor where you are now, mm-hmm. the relationship you have with your child, mm-hmm. because every day that changes, mm-hmm. and kind of take a mental snapshot of where you are today and find something to be grateful for.
Absolutely.
You know, and grateful with your child, in your relationship mm-hmm. with your child, or who your child is, or what you can do today that maybe you wouldn't get to do otherwise, and just focus on that a little bit and realize that there's good in every day and there's difficult in every day, but we really have to focus on the what's good.
And I could not agree more. I think that is perfect. And I'm just so grateful for you taking the time to have this conversation with me. You know, we've gotten to know each other over the past several years. You were gracious enough to, you know, read Jeff's book and endorse Jeff's book, Common Man Extraordinary Call. And through that, I've kind of gotten to know you and seen each other when we've had conferences. We've gotten to do our conferences this year, but, you know, gotten to see you. And I've just so enjoyed getting to know you over these past couple of years. And you are just a joy and a delight, and just are doing so much to bring hope to the special needs community. And so just thank you for what you do, what you put out there to help enrich our families, because we are grateful.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for having me on the show. And really, you know, it's really, for me, a true joy to be able to take all these experiences that I've had through life that were not of my own making for the most part, you know, mm-hmm. and see how they've been put together. And now not have to be actively caregiving for someone in my house and be able to pass along what I've learned to people who are, because yes. I know that they don't have the time to find the resources or to think of the new ways to do stuff. And I just want to be there for them and provide out of what I've been given.
Well, we are grateful. So tell everyone where they can find you, because you and I've talked, you may not be ready to share yet, but you've got some really exciting projects in the hopper. So, so where can people find you and follow you so that when these new projects come out, they can find out about them?
Sure. You can go to my website, which is differentdream.com. You can just go there and you'll find links to my Facebook page. I do have a Facebook page that's called A Different Dream for My Child. You can find me there. That's my author page, or you can look for me for my personal page, Jolene Philo, and that's Jolene Philo. And look for me there. I'd love to get to know you there. I also have another website that hopefully will be getting more active quite soon, and it's called JoleneFilo.com. Or you can look for it as Down the Gravel Road, because I'm working on some fiction that does have a caregiver in it and a person with disabilities. So as that fiction book gets off the ground and hopefully finds a home with a publisher, that will become a more active website. And I'll be doing more that way too. So those are the best places to find me right now.
Okay. Well, we'll have links to the show notes so everyone can find you. And again, I just am so grateful and appreciate your time today. And I can't wait till we actually get to see each other really face to face. Who knows when, but we will. So
probably going to be a year, I would guess.
I would think so too, but we will. So anyway, thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. We would like to thank Jimmy Thorpe and Patrick Mayberry for providing the music for our podcast today. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.